Hey there, cyclocross friends, and welcome to another episode of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, episode 47, we welcome back Scott Diedenbach and David Palin for another episode of They Don't Do That in Europe. And this time around, we're sticking in the U.S. to start out with. We talk about the C1 and C2 weekend that just happened in Baltimore, Maryland, Charm City Cyclocross. We have a really good discussion on that. Then we touch on Ronza, the Deveve race that took place also over the weekend. Get in that, talk about the stars of the sport and how they're doing. We are in it. We are in cyclocross. It is here. It's happening. And we're going to be with you all season long. Most likely what we're going to do is we're going to continue to do these TDDTIE episodes weekly. And then I will also intersperse some other shows in there with interviews and special guests throughout the season. So that's the plan, subject to change, but that's what we're looking at so far. For this episode, I want to give a shout out to another one of these great sponsors I had back on the Itch Tour at the beginning of this season, and this time around it is SDG Components. Speed defies gravity. These guys make amazing saddles, and you all need to get one underneath you. Here's the deal for me personally. I'm a bigger guy, 6'5", you know, weight-wise, it can get up there around 200. Don't like to race at that weight, but that's just reality. I need something that is going to be durable. These guys make not only race-ready saddles, but something that is going to be able to withstand a beating. They make saddles for downhill. They make saddles for all kinds of competition. They're rugged, they're durable, they're light, they're really everything that you want. Check out their competition series. Check out the cool Shibuya Circuit Mountain series. You know, that's the design that, if you've ever seen pictures of Amanda Naum, and that's what she has on her bike, and the SDG kits match up with it. It's really cool, dazzle design, and the rest of their line. You can just go to sdgcomponents.com, check out the whole line of saddles and other products that they have available, and give them a shout out on social media. Let them know that you heard about them through Crosshairs Radio and also on the Itch Tour. If you're looking for skills, drills, and belly aches, it is back in stock, cyclocrossbook.com. Also, you can just search for it on Amazon. Also, toe spikes from Horst Engineering. Those are fully stocked in the store, crosshaircycling.com/shop. You can find all kinds of different toe spikes. We even have titanium ones in there now. It's getting sloppy out there, so now's the time to buy. If you got anything to say to me, just want to say hi, whatever it may be, feedback@cxhairs.com. That is my email address. Also, give me a follow on Twitter @cxhairs, also on Instagram @cxhair. I've been doing trying out some new video formats on Instagram, including sort of almost mini Sven-ness type videos to fill that void if you're missing the bigger, longer ones. That was a statement right there. Yeah, if you're missing the bigger, longer ones, go to Instagram. We'll just sit on that. All right, here you go. This is They Don't Do That in Europe, episode 47. As always, Scott Diedenbach is going to take over as your host, and he's going to do that right now.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is a rare night recording. Welcome back to They Don't Do That in Europe, part of Crosshairs Radio, Wide Angle Podium Network. On my left, as always, Mr. David Palin.
Good evening, one and all.
I said evening because we're recording so late at night.
Yes.
Yeah. And on the right, of course, Bill Shiken. Bill.
Scott.
What's going on?
What is going on? Not much. And everything all at the same time.
It seems weird to be recording back on Skype.
Yeah, I know. It was so nice having y'all here. And now you're actually back home. Well, I mean, you know.
I'm so hurt.
Well, David, now you got to make a
point about DC. David, Scott is Cyclocross Network, but we're all part of the Cyclocross Network.
Old-time listeners will totally get that joke, yeah. So. All right, guys, we are here to do a show, right, about Charm City Cyclocross event, First year as a C1, so that was kind of cool. And then we're going to talk about Ranta, the race over in Europe. Europe cranking up a bit. And we were just saying, Bill, that it's for some reason it doesn't feel like the European season starts until November, though, right?
Yeah, and I think it's just because we're all doing our own thing and at races and at our own UCI races, and it makes it more difficult to actually watch the races live, especially. And then even, you know, it seems like we're back to one of those years. It started a little bit with that whole Telenet play sports thing last year with the Super Prestige, and then again this year it seems like it's getting hard again to track down these races. I see like Ronson now just showed up on YouTube, but you definitely have to be more patient. We had a couple really good years there where it was like, you know, available live and available right away afterwards, and now I agree. Seems like it's more of a task.
Yes, I totally agree that's been more difficult this year to do. So,
but it is also, as I said, you know, come December, you know, or even November when my series is over, then I'm just sitting at home on the weekends. Then I make a point of watching everything live. And then it seems like, oh, I'm in the thick of it. This is the cyclocross season. And, you know, hey, it goes till March. So,
right. And, you know, and for me, you know, it's like instead of being out at races being rained on every weekend, like I get to actually sit and watch races being rained on, getting my tents blown across parking lots, you know, all that kind of fun stuff.
I don't know. I doubt that I woke Scott up, David, but I did text him at like 7 a.m. in the morning on Saturday to let him know that his tents were still in place. Nice. Or no, was it Sunday?
It was Sunday.
Yeah, because Saturday night in Baltimore, it was like Dorothy and the Wicked Witch were landing.
Yeah, the hurricane.
That Matthew, right?
Yeah, for sure.
The remnants of Matthew, whatever, didn't turn back on Florida, came up there, and they had some good high winds that ended several team tents.
But not our, well, this, I don't know if you saw how we were like protected. We had Max's Shimano right behind us with their huge trailer. Yes, we had our trailer on the other side and my Sprinter on the other side. We had three, we were like, and strapped down, man. We had, like,
and strapped from the top this time with the buckets full of water.
Yes, from the top and the bottom. And that would have taken, a hurricane to blow that away.
Yeah. For those who may not be caught up on their TDD TIE, Scott, lost all of his, well, just the top three quarters of his tent in Iowa. The legs were still nailed down to the pavement.
Yeah, and everything else was gone. So what a wonderful thing. All right, well, we want to talk about Charm City a little bit first. That was a, like I said, first year as a C1. Coming into Charm City, have never been there before, so that was kind of cool, getting to go to a new race. Got there Saturday, and good racing on Saturday. We got some mud, right, on Saturday?
Yeah, it was a really, I thought the weekend worked out really well. You know, raining throughout the day Saturday. The place doesn't get really muddy, and what you didn't get to experience because of that rain, which is a Charm City tradition that we all hate, is it's usually a dust bowl. Like that, right. That track will get burned in, and then it's just awful. It'll be like 85 degrees and just dust everywhere. And what this did was, you know, it was a little slippery on Saturday, but then it just set everything up for Sunday to make it just perfect conditions.
Yeah, the course surface on Sunday, I think, was really, really good. But on Saturday, one thing that did add to it, like you said, there wasn't a ton of mud, but the grass had just freshly been cut. So that stuff just, you know how that is. It just sticks on everything. Yeah. It's easy to wash off. So that's the good thing about it. But, well, it's easy to wash off the frames. It does get up in the derailleurs and stuff. But,
it's funny how you and I see these things from completely different perspectives. Like, right. So I was announcing this race, so I'm just sitting on top of this trailer. I can see the whole course. It's the best seat in the house, and I'm watching these little, you know, areas where it's muddy and slick, especially like after the one tricky one started to come up, like right after the barriers, there was a quick left turn and people were remounting and then sliding out, you know. So it was all these neat little things that everybody had to keep in mind. You're like stuck down there in the pits just going,
I'm down in the trenches.
Come on.
Yeah.
We've got this grass. We got this mud. We got this long line for, you know,
to, for power washers.
For power washers and people being jerks in the lines. And yeah.
Yeah. Which did happen. I won't know. Don't want to harp on it, but
I've heard stories about one team in particular. But
I mean, they only had two power washers, isn't good. And then they were letting the Masters people jump in the line to use it during the elite races.
Yeah.
So
that was ridiculous. That's just wrong.
And they're like, well, we're only letting them in when it's not being used. But that's not the point. I run up there with someone's bike and both washers are in the process of being used by Masters people because there was no one right there at that second. But then now there is, and they're not going to stop. So I'm waiting, you know, and it took a long time to get your bike back. And by the end of the races, that line was way out into the pit.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that they need to improve on. They don't have a water source, so they just need to rent another tank that's a non-racing bike wash station.
Something out in the parking lot.
Yeah, because right. I believe for a C1.
Oh, listen to David assuming there's a parking lot.
Yeah, there's no parking lot.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah, it's Baltimore. You guys don't do things like any unimproved land.
You gotta know how to parallel park, man. It's a city.
One thing I gotta say is that park,
like in front of that church, right?
That park is beautiful.
Yeah, oh, isn't that a great facility?
Yeah, it's a great park. Great park.
It's cozy. It's cozy in there. I mean, you found out coming in there, you know, the sort of large team expo area is pretty tight. And
yeah, but it was big enough. You know what I mean? It was big enough. You had to be close to everybody. Everyone had to keep it, you know, tight, locked in, really tight. But with the winds, like we're saying, that wasn't the worst thing in the world. And you know, but it was big enough for what they had there to do. So that was not a problem at all. And like you said, I think the rain on Saturday really set up great conditions for Sunday. Once the sun came out and that stuff started tacking up, we got to see some really cool stuff. So, or well, at least you did, because you could see everything.
Yeah, and I could. And the thing about this race, you know, this is now the 11th or 12th year of this race. When it started, everything was over on that sand side. That was like the center of the race, and it went farther in that direction. And it's when they finally came over to that mansion side, you know, and up that hill and took in that whole hill, that I think that's when the course really became what it is today and became that elite level course. And it also opened it up for spectators, that it's really easy to go to several different spots quickly and see the race in different places.
Another really positive thing I would say about the Pro Expo area is it was actually in a spot on the course where you want to be.
Yeah.
You had easy access to start line, bathroom, food vendors, pit. Everything you needed to get to was right there within a few yards away. So very convenient spot to have that Pro Expo as far as getting to the things you needed to get to around the course. So that was really good.
Yeah,
that was
good food too.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. Which is always nice.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, do you want to say anything about the racing bill before we mention the results, or you want to just hit the results?
I thought we had exciting racing, and what I liked is that all of the races, I mean, the women's races were, you know, Katie Compton is just on fire. I mean, that's basically, you know, she hung out for a couple laps each day, and there was one spot, you know, there's this hill up to the sand pit that's this sort of long gradual climb that I think is perfect for her. And each day, you know, lap two, lap three, she was like, all right guys, it's been cool, I'll see you later.
And you could just see there was places where she was just putting power down on the pedals where no one else could.
The thing that impressed me the most is after that climb through the sand, when they would come back down, there was a long descent and then you make this quick turn and then head up on the asphalt to the finish, she was out of her saddle sprinting down that hill. only one doing it. So it wasn't even her power on the uphills. Like every time she hit that descent, she got like a half a second to a second every lap.
You know? She still wanted to go faster. Yeah, for sure. Other people were recovering. She's like trying to go faster.
Yeah. Great showing by Emma White, who's won there before. I think she swept the weekend last year when it was a C2. So she came back, I think, had the confidence to have a good show there.
Well, let's just give the women's results then. So for the women, in first place was Katie Compton. Second place, Helen Wyman. Third place, Emma White. Fourth place, Caroline Mani. And fifth place, Crystal Anthony. This is for the C2 on Saturday. You've said a lot of good things. Caroline Mani, again, being strong as always. Crystal Anthony finally getting into the top five. So that's cool to see. Maybe a little bit of a return to form for her.
This is right. Like when this first started being a C2, this was the first chance really in the Mid-Atlantic we started seeing pro racers. Somebody who was always there was Helen Wyman, and she used to ride around ride away from everybody at this race. So it was really interesting seeing Katie there with Helen, who's still strong, and just, you know, at least at this point in the season, just seeing the difference right now in performances and where they are at. You know, Helen's still faster than everybody else, but, you know, at least on Saturday. But, Katie just in a different, whole different world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Switching over for the men, we saw in first place was Stephen Hyde. Second place, Kerry Werner. That's a name we don't get to say as much as some of the others. In third place, Curtis White. Fourth place, Tobin Ortenblad. And in fifth place, Yannick Ekman. So some of the young guys for the U.S. Getting up there into that top five with Tobin and Yannick and Curtis, of course.
Yeah, that was funny. It was almost like a U23 battle. You know, looking at it, I was like, these guys have, you know, how many times have those three like been racing each other, you know, at nationals and everything else.
I mean, the only guy missing from that group was Drew, who wasn't there.
I really, really excited for Kerry Werner, you know, really good showing for him. And he's a guy who I think has been coming on strong. You know, he had a bad crash at Vegas and that like 2 seconds into the race and was sort of bummed about that, but then came back at strong after that, had good showings up. I think he was on the podium up at KMC, and then coming down here and in that second place was huge. But Hyde is sort of like Katie Compton. Hyde is just in another realm right now. I mean, that guy is flying, and not to disrespect anybody else in that race, but I really think he was strong enough that he could hold something back and still go away when he wanted to on Saturday and win that race with ease.
Yeah, I would completely agree. That's what I saw from the pit, and I would agree with that. And, you know, that's where he is. We've seen that with Powers before, too, you know, where there's races like that. But, totally agree. But it set up a good race for the next day, for sure, when we knew Powers was going to come back.
Yeah, so on that Saturday race in the rain, you had a really good look of Hyde making his move, because I think he attacked right at the pits, and nobody else was doing that. That was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, I think he did, but I think I was on the opposite side right there.
Yeah.
When that happened, so I didn't totally like see it. I was still over on the other side of the pit, so I didn't totally get to see it. I did get to see the Tobin, where Tobin and Curtis kind of got into it the next day.
Yeah,
that caused quite a little bit of commotion, because of course the Cannondale guys, you know, then scrambled to choke up in the pit to try and get a bike up to the front,
right?
Should he need it, and then Curtis just comes flying right by the entrance, doesn't even pull into the pit. Everybody just kind of looked at him. They're like, well, I guess they're like, he hit hard, but I guess everything's okay. Go ahead.
Speaking of the pits, and just, you know, let's just get into a little like into the weeds a little bit about course design and pit setup. And it's something that we, you know, when we're watching, sometimes we'll see it, but we don't always sort of appreciate or take notice of. But I know Mark Legg had mentioned it, sort of his frustration of the opposite side pits, and what that causes and what you have to deal with. And sort of explain what that means, actually.
Yeah, so normally people come in and do their bike exchanges on the non-drive side, right? They come from the mechanics left right? And they come in and you do the bike exchange with them coming from your left, and they take the bike out of your right hand. When the course hits the pit in the other direction, what the mechanics all have to do then is cross the pit lane and stand on the opposite side. So what it does is it thins the pit lane, right? It makes it a lot thinner so that there's more congestion. But the other thing it does is it creates people having to walk across what is technically a racing part of the course, right?
Right.
So it creates that problem of somebody. And when you do that, and especially when both sides are like that, both sides are coming from the direction that is not normal. You really have to be watching. I mean, you have to constantly be watching for anybody coming into the pit at any time, if you're even going to move. The other problem that it set up at this course with the way they had it set up is there was no, and I just think in a C1, you should probably be able to design your course so that that doesn't have to happen. I think that's a legitimate complaint. But the other thing it set up at this course was, they only had a rope separating that pit lane from the actual race lane. So with all the mechanics across that pit lane and turned around, all the rear wheels of the bikes are really sticking out into the course.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I actually took a picture of it. I'm like, this isn't good. You got to have fencing up here,
right,
so that those rear wheels can't stay. Because it was just a piece of rope, you know, so everyone's rear wheel is like sticking behind them onto the actual course. So that's just an accident waiting to happen right there. So I think that would definitely be a problem. At least you got to get some fencing put up there so that those bikes can't be scooted back into the actual race lane.
Yeah, and just to explain.
So here's my question for that is, at that level of racing in particular, these guys can mount from either side of the bike. And you're the pro, you're at the top of the sport. You should be able to have enough either practice sessions or whatever that you and your mechanic can do that bike exchange in either direction. And if you can't, then that's the advantage to the dirty side mounters or whatever. You got to stick to a rule and say you can't cross the pit lane. You want to complain about it, it's in the opposite direction or whatever. That's a legitimate complaint.
Yeah.
But these guys can mount from either side.
Yeah, that's true. And that's not a rule right now that you can't cross the pit lane. So everybody does it because they want to do the bike swap from the side that they're most comfortable from. So, you know, that's why they do it. But if that were a rule, then yeah, you would have to do that. But, you know, is it a course design thing, or is it just something that, yeah, tough, everybody should have to mount from that side if that's the way the course is set up? Yeah, it could go either way. And as long I think it's just something that should be clarified, and we should consistently try and do one way or the other, you know what I'm saying, so that everybody knows what to do when that situation
you're going to get the left-handed coalition against you if you say that, cuz then they're going to say, well, that's fine, then half of the races have to be, you know, going the what we would consider the wrong way, so that they are remounting on their, you know, on their comfortable side.
So is it just a rule, you know, a rule that you can't cross the pit? I don't know what a good solution is, yeah, you definitely need something more than a rope separating the pit from the course.
And what people have to realize is that most of the time, so just to make sure everybody understands what we're talking about, when you see a pit, all of the bikes and all the mechanics and the racks are in the middle, and then, you know, the pit lane is on the outside, and all of the mechanics would take the bikes to the other side, sort of the course side, and line up there. Once their riders pass by, they're all taking those bikes still. They still have a bike, and just crossing back over back to the middle of the pit. And then, you know, you have a lot of people doing that when these groups come by, and everybody, I think the complaint is not always looking to their right to see if anybody else is coming through that pit lane and exchanging bikes, and you can really, you know, have an opportunity for a collision there. And we've seen it at the highest level. We've seen it at World Cup races where there have been collisions in the pits before, because, you know, the mechanics are just, I mean, they're worried about their guy, they're worried about their guy's bike, and they're just, you know, concentrating on that and not necessarily paying attention to what's happening around them.
Yeah,
in particular, in a race like this one, which bikes, you only had two power washers, and you wanted to run that bike over as quick as possible to get it washed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bigger issue for this race is the pit was not managed effectively, and that's really on the race organizer.
Yeah.
On Sunday, you're going to love this story. On Sunday, during the women's elite event, nobody checked tire size in either race. That's the officials. But
what, there was no jig at the start line?
At the start line, none in the pit, though. They usually check the pit bikes, too.
Yeah. Oh, I got you. Right.
Yeah, so there was nobody checking ID to get into the pit. Nobody checking armbands or anything. So Sunday, we're sitting there pitting for Jen, and these four hipsters roll in on single speeds and started locking their bike to the racks. We're like,
there was no guys chill in the pit.
No one said anything. They rolled right into the pit, dude.
Like it was valet parking.
Like it was bike parking.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, that's the problem. Nobody is managing this pit.
So, oh my God.
That's the overarching problem, I think, right now for that whole pit situation at that race. So, yeah, that was great.
That is outstanding. I hadn't heard that.
Then they had an attitude when we like kicked them out, you know, like it's like, God, come on.
Oh my goodness.
So anyways, yeah. So there's some work that needs to be done on the pit, in my opinion. I would agree with Mark, but the specifics, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. All right. Let's
talk about Sunday. Well, we already talked about Sunday a little bit, but let's go back to the women real quick, because we know Katie Compton got the win. Second place, Emma White. Third place, Helen Wyman. Fourth place, Caroline Mani. Fifth place was Amanda Miller. Now, one of the things, Bill, that I saw in this race is, you remember Emma White and Helen Wyman's Ellen Noble.
Yeah.
Both took off in
yes,
that first
they did.
Lap.
Yeah, it looked like just that. Like was it a B post race or, you know, one of those European races last year where they were like, all right, let's go. And the pair of them just, you know, left everybody behind. And yeah, same thing this race.
And one of the things I think, you know, they didn't really work together. It looks like they were really fighting each other. Ellen, of course, had a, you know, just a bad day, I think, is all it was.
She wasn't she said she wasn't feeling well and just, one of her worst days, I think she said, on her bike.
Yeah, and ended up dropping way back in the field. But I was like, at the time, I'm thinking, man, why don't the two of them at least do something together, you know, because, you know, Katie Compton's back there just waiting, right?
Right.
just waiting. She's going to go. She's going to get you. But the two of them never seemed to be able to like try and even, they didn't even attempt to try and work together maybe a little bit and try and at least hold off Katie as long as they could. Instead, they kind of attacked each other with Ellen eventually blowing up and Emma, of course, getting caught by Katie. So I don't know, maybe a little bit of their youth showing there, you think, or just...
Yeah, I don't know. I think Emma, you know, again, felt good because it was a course she knew and felt confident on. And it's also, you know, you have to try something against Katie Compton, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like she sat, she didn't sit on her wheel. They were, you know, the lead duo along with Helen the day before. And then she was actually, you know, she raced with her for a pretty long time on Sunday. And yeah, I mean, you have to do something, you know.
Yeah.
Or you can just watch her do what she's, you know, eventually she's going to go. Assuming she doesn't have any issues, she's just going to take off and go. She's just that good right now.
Which is going to lead up to some interesting stuff come Europe time with her getting back and what happened in Ronza with who won that race, I think. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But okay, so anything else about the women? Or do you want to move on to men's results?
Sure.
First place was Stephen Hyde. Second place, Jeremy Powers. Third place was Timmerman. Fourth place was Summerhill. And fifth place was Driscoll. David, I also want to mention that for the women's race in 28th, we got to mention Gabby Stern.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a local racer for us here in Michigan, so that was cool.
Oh, cool.
But anyways, yeah, so Hyde getting the win over Powers. Powers, of course, first race back after the injuries that we've been talking about that he sustained at the Trek race. So it was, people were kind of curious to see what happened. Powers, to me, Bill, still didn't look 100%.
Oh, he said as much. You know, he told me he's on the mend. He's getting there, but he's not he's not 100%. But that's also
so. Is that injury or is that ailment?
Injury. Illness. Injury. Yeah, he's just okay. Yeah, I don't think he's physically 100% healthy. You know, but nothing to take away from Hyde, who again is just flying.
Yeah, and rode a smart race. I think he did what he had to do.
Oh,
he,
yeah. I mean, let's talk about it. The group of 13 for most of this race.
At the front, yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing. It was like a road race. There was a peloton out there.
Yeah. And that's when that episode with Tobin and Curtis happened in that mix there. That broke it up a little bit at that point. But,
you know,
yeah.
Alan, just, we even saw, you know, Alan Krugoff get out into the front and lead a couple laps. You know, I mean,
couple
I think
laps,
yeah, put a good show in and it was crazy. But then as soon as, what was it? It was probably about as late as like three laps to go, Powers, you know, finally made a move. And until that time, he was behind normally Jeremy Duren or, you know, there was a group of three. And then he was pretty much holding up traffic about a second back. And he wasn't going to get too close for them. He was playing it safe. Didn't want anybody crashing in front of him. Or if they did, he had room to get around. So there was like this tight three. And then he was like leading this train of about 9 or 10 more. And about three laps to go, it was go time. And the guy that was on his shoulder never moved up, even though there was a little gap in front of Powers. Hyde just sat on Jeremy's shoulder the whole race. He did not leave. He was always fifth place. You know, Powers was always fourth. You know, Hyde was always fifth. And as soon as Powers went, it really looked effortless for Hyde to say, all right, we're racing now. And he just stayed on his shoulder and just went up to the front with them. And then they just kept extending.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong that Stephen Hyde did that race. He just rode a beautiful race. Like you said, strong, had the strength, had the smarts, and deserved the win completely. So good job.
And then the name that we haven't mentioned in that trio, the other guy, the one guy that was able to stick with them, Dan Timmerman. Great race by Dan Timmerman.
Absolutely, man. I mean, that was really cool to see that him up there, like you said, in that big group. And I thought it was awesome.
It led to our most exciting finish. You know, Hyde was able to get a lead. He ended up, I'd say, with 9-10 second lead at the end. The sprint, two man sprint, which we don't see a lot of. You know, it's tough to make that turn and sprint for home at Charm City. It's really exciting. It's an uphill sprint, and it was, you know, Powers and Timmerman, and Powers I think went pretty deep and you know, was able to pip him at the line. But that was a really exciting sprint for second place.
So have you been talking with Dan? Shall we be expecting more from him this year, or what's going on with that?
I don't know. I know Dan Timmerman's a guy who does what he wants to do. So, you know, he's always been a strong racer. I kind of like it. He just sort of does his, you know, he wants to win, of course, you know, but he's not overambitious about it. So, you know, to the point that he's not going to this World Cup. He's going to come down in 2 weeks and race DCCX. So it's going to be awesome to have him down there. And it's, he's always a fun one.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'm glad to see he's going to DCCX. I think he's going to be that's going to be a great race that you're going to have down there, Bill.
Yeah,
when is that?
A lot of talent showing up there too.
Yeah, October 22nd, 23rd. It's a weird. You know, we can talk a little bit about the whole sort of national scene after we sort of put a pin into Charm City.
So, all right, is that all for Charm City?
We could do that now. I think so. I was. You know, this is the race, and I know that I had as diplomatically as possible aired my complaints in shows in the past, especially last year, that this hadn't been a C1 already, because, you know, it was a bad scheduling, and it always came up against Trek, who was always the C1. The fact that, you know, I guess we can thank Sven. We can thank Sven Ness for having Charm City as a C1 this year, when all those guys decided that they were going to race in Wisconsin, and the schedule sort of got moved around a little bit. So the Trek race was before Vegas. That meant that there was no longer that conflict between Waterloo in Baltimore, and Charm City finally got to see one. And despite what we were talking about with the pits and that kind of stuff, I thought that's all fixable stuff and pretty minor. But as far as the course layout, as far as the job that 2020 Cycling, Chris Auer, Jay Lazar, everybody who makes that race possible, the work that they put into it, I think definitely deserved to be a C1, and they pulled it off, and it was an awesome event.
Cool.
Well, yeah. Seeing it from the outside, not being there, looking at the videos that were up and the race reports, it certainly has everything that a C1 should have.
Yeah, yeah. It's got these really neat, you know, they use that hillside really well. They do. I was talking to some people about this. This is actually something that I, you know, maybe talking about course design, that in the U.S. we seem to really like 45 and 90 degree angles. Everything has to be straight. If you look at a hill, you're either going to go up the hill or you're going to go across the hill. It's like, right. We seem stuck in that, you know, everything's got to be square. In Belgium, they go sideways up the hill, you know, they'll go like they'll sort of jut up the side and then come back down, you know, do like little, you know, turn at the top and come back down, which makes it hard because you're like going up and then a little off camber at the same time, and it's just it's not natural to do. I think we stick with what's natural, it seems like. So that's what, you know, with the help of Steph Wyman and some other folks, that they were able to design this course that really uses those features that you really see more in these European races, how they look at a hillside and they say, okay, let's set it up like this. And it really looked like a lot of the races you'd see in Europe. And I think that speaking to the racers, it was good. It had a good flow, but it was still really hard.
Like the like that curly descent at Jingle Cross. That's kind of why that reminds us so much of Europe, I think, is because it doesn't go straight up or straight across. It's kind of arcs and comes down, crumpet from that offside there. So,
exactly the same way. Exactly the same. Yep. Totally.
Yep. Okay, guys. Well, let's wrap up Charm City and move on. We're also going to talk about Ranza. David.
Yes, sir.
You got to watch this race, right? I have not seen any of it.
I did see this race. This was a great race. And as someone posted up on the interwebs, it was a race that was really kind of not really determined by, but determined in spite of mechanicals in both the men's race and the women's race.
Yeah, so this was the one where Wout dropped his chain all those times, right? Twice?
Yeah, twice anyways. Sure, twice.
At least twice.
Yeah. And then just to not be outdone, Vanderpool snapped his either, it's unclear whether it was his bottom bracket or just a crank arm, because both crank arms were pointing in the same direction at some point.
Yeah, he had like power cranks there for a while.
Yeah, he's trying triathlon look at it.
But I really like your comment on Twitter, Bill, about, you know, it's a lesson in never giving up, right?
Yeah, it was sort of funny. That was, so I posted sort of a mini Svenness on my Instagram feed, which is at CX Hairs, just really looking at all of those mechanicals in the men's race and then just how Van Aert didn't give up. You know, he was frustrated. He was definitely frustrated, especially when he was, you know, on the run up and having mechanicals while running with his bike for the second week in a row.
Which is usually a time when you don't think you're going to have a mechanical.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And, you know, but he stuck with it. He worked his way back through the field. And then it turned out that, you know, Vanderpool also had a mechanical. Wout catches him. And then the two things that, you know, and he just didn't give up and he got the win. The other thing that was interesting there, and you saw, you know, you saw this as well, they really looked like part of Vanderpool's downfall was this pit was a little bit, you know, falls flat, a little uphill.
Oh, and they put him in the wrong gear.
Holy cow, he gets on that bike and he's like, ugh.
I saw that. I was like, what is going on with that?
Yeah, so that crew did him no favors for getting back out there. Yeah.
Is that one of these family members are your pit crew, or does he have a professional pit crew?
Well,
it's just an oversight.
It's probably family. His dad may be in there for all we know.
There you go.
So, yeah.
So somehow it's going to be the end of the dynasty between that and the way he came down on that bike.
Oh, geez.
When that broke.
Yeah, he, yeah.
All I could think was I would probably be laying over on the side of that course. I mean, the fact that he got up and continued was amazing.
Yeah, as I say on that Instagram post, it definitely left a mark. So for those who don't know, he basically straddled his top tube. You can just use your imagination with all of his force.
All right. Well, let's give the top five results first place.
Yes. Okay. Go ahead. No. Let's do the results, and then I want to come back and complain.
Okay. In first place was Wout van Aert. Second place, Jens Adams. Third place, Michael van Thurnout. Fourth place was Matthew Vanderpool. And in fifth place, Kevin Powles.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, seeing Jens Adam up there, I think he's having a quiet, really good year. And then also Powles seems to be finding his form as well. Just going back to all of the mechanicals that happened I put this out on Twitter and I went back and forth with a couple commenters on my Instagram feed in that you see these great feats of athleticism. You see a guy in Wout van Aert that's having problems, that obstacles are put in front of him, yet he doesn't quit and he's able to persevere and he's able to take the win. And what cyclist, bike racers, wannabe bike racers, whatever you want to call them, what they care about in that situation that is just is dripping with drama is that, well, I don't know if I could use those components. Let's have a really in-depth conversation about those new components. And I don't think, you know, marketing wise, this is really, no, this isn't going well for company A or company B that you know, this would be on there. And it's like, well, you know, let's talk about this guy in years past. And he also had issues and he was on this brand and not that brand. And I'm like, guys,
dude, if I could just tell you the frustration that I have about this, it just drives me crazy. I completely agree with you. It's just ridiculous.
You know, you see it in everything. I see it in photography too. It's not like the people are more concerned about like how sharp a lens is and how high ISO it can go without having noise than like, well, let's see your pictures. Let's talk about what all of these tools are supposed to actually do.
Completely agree. I mean,
you don't hear Monday at the water cooler after the NASCAR guys get done or the football guys are done about those cleats that he was wearing when he dove for that catch.
Yeah, good smart move.
Really upset about that.
Smart move moving away from the NASCAR because I guarantee you it happens there.
That's why I didn't go away there.
I mean,
I know.
As much as component manufacturers would like to make us believe, the world champion is not decided by SRAM or Shimano. It just isn't, right? It's the strongest rider.
And it's also, since I've been watching cyclocross, no component manufacturer yet has been able to solve chains coming off of chain rings.
Exactly. They've done stuff to try and improve it.
Absolutely.
But no one has completely solved the problem.
You know, it's not a one by, it's not a two by, it's not a three by. You know, it's all of these. Yeah, it's. I want somebody to have a triple out there.
I'm doing it.
Calling Wolftooth, get him on
anyway,
the phone.
That is my rant, and I mean, people that know me know I'm not like, you know, I don't get super hung up on gear to start with. So maybe that's just my own bias, but I like the performances. I like the in this one, you know, not only the strategy but what happens in the race and just the you know, Van Aert being able to come back and win that, and Vanderpool being back and, you know, making. The other thing is that these guys are making mistakes because they're pushing each other. You know, nobody has pushed Wout van Aert until this point. So it's great. It's making him have to race and not be like super cool the whole time and just take the win. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm looking forward to as we move forward. What they decide to do with their drivetrains, you all can discuss.
I think a lot of it is because that's something that the average Joe Blow racer can relate to, right? You know, they've got Shimano on their bike, they've got SRAM on their bike, whatever. But so they can identify with it.
Yeah, I get it. No, I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. But yeah, that's a good point. But so let's move on to the women in this race. First place.
Before you go with the results, again, the chain drop. And again, big focus in on her Durace chain rings while she's putting her gear back together again.
This was for Thalita.
Wait, yeah. how is she able to put ETAP onto to Dura-Ace chain rings? I don't understand. Because it's obviously the ETAP that's the problem.
Of course.
Gotta be.
Because she's using clips and not clips.
All right. First place was Thalita de Jong. Second place, Sané Kant. Third place, Sophie DeBoer. Fourth place, Paula Havlikova. Fifth place, Lucinda Brand. And just so for the American fans, in 17th place was Ellie Anderson. Thalita de Jong, how impressive or how dominant of a performance did she give to get that win, David?
It was, I mean, she was off the front. She threw her chain at the end, at the bottom of a, or the mid climb, got off her bike, tried to fix it. Then ran her bike up on her shoulder to the top of the climb, got over, got the chain back on, rewound her watch, checked her watch, hit the lap button, got back on, and finished. I mean, she had obviously a good lead on everybody. Something that I don't think Sané Kant is used to seeing, somebody that far out in the front of her.
Well, this is what this is making me wonder is, once Katie Compton is racing in Europe again, if Thalita de Jong is there, is this going to set up two similar power riders that ride off the front with their power like that? We could see a really good showdown between the two of them.
Hope so.
Right. And the two of them pushing each other off the front.
Right. Exactly.
A big separation between them and the also Rans.
Yeah, <right. laughs> Well, one, I think we're all happy that the world champion showed up.
That was very cool.
Because that was the question after she won, being more of a road racer, was, is she going to be there, especially early in the season? So that's pretty awesome. And then a dominant performance. And it's still, you know, we still have these questions about Sané Kant. And is Thalita de Jong's performance that much more dominant because something's going on still with Kant? I mean, she has not had that strong of a season, or is that on purpose? Has it always been super long season that she's always talked about and had, you know, you sort of question if she's doing the right thing, as opposed to maybe ramping it up later and looking for that elusive world championship, which is basically the only thing that she hasn't won at this point.
It's all certainly possible. But to say that she's just sitting back, she was fighting pretty hard.
Yeah, I don't think she's sitting back, but folks. Maybe she just purposefully doesn't have the fitness yet.
Yeah, she's just not peak. She's just not in peak form yet. Yeah, that could, you know, she's certainly still trying hard to win. She's just not peaking yet. Yeah, and I think that's definitely possible too, Bill. I think that's, you know, a lot of the racers feel that way and do that and start with a slower start. But we'll see. Yeah, I agree. It's very curious to see what she's going to do. And it just makes, again, one more element to the women's field that makes it that much more interesting, in my opinion.
This is the first time in several years that we've had rainbow stripes in both elite races this early in the season.
That's really cool. So yeah, props to her for doing that. That's really cool. I wonder if she's thinking, you know, maybe I should be doing a little more cyclocross. Maybe I'm, you know, I guess since I'm world champion, maybe I'm better at this than I thought, and I'll do a little more of it. I hope that's the case. Well,
it also means that she's not at Worlds for road,
right?
So road,
right,
sort of
right, right,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah, very interesting. So, all right, cool. Well, anything else we want to talk about the women's race here?
Lucinda Brand seems to be a name that's coming up a little bit this year.
Yeah, what's going on with that, man?
She's been having, well, once they got it back to Europe, she's been really doing well and fighting for wins and for top fives and for podiums. It's a name I think we're going to need to keep an eye on, as well as Jolien Verschuren.
Oh yeah, I mean she always does well in certain things. I think she's one to be watching. I've been watching her last year, and I'm very curious to see what she's going to do this year as the season goes on and we get later in the year. So yeah, two really good names.
Yeah, I guess when you're talking, Scott, the one well now. Big mixed emotions on this because I am extremely happy that Katie Compton is coming to our race here in DC, DCCX, but it does mean that she's not going to be at Valkenburg, which is a race that she has done awesome at in the past. And it would have been, I think, a good test against Felita, who maybe that doesn't play to her strengths.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's another sign of Katie just kind of sticking to her guns of I'm going to race more in the U.S., you know, at this point in my career. So, it's cool. It's really cool that she's going to be at DCCX, by the way.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, if we want to just sort of segue over to that, it's still something that it's really, you know, and again, it's sort of like with my Charm City conversation, this is something that I'm close to. So maybe I'm, you know, not seeing the trees here for the forest, but it's still upsetting to me a little bit, you know. And I sort of talked about it with Micah Rice when he was on the show that we have two C2 races basically in the same region, you know. And I sort of put that out there on Twitter today, and getting a lot of people.
I saw that.
Yeah, you know. Wanting to, you know, it's talking about the Pacific Northwest or California and that kind of stuff. And it's a lot of different issues running around. You know, there you can't really blame USA Cycling, because if you want to have a UCI race in your region, you got to really go out and just start it and do it on your own. You know, it's not USA Cycling's job to create races. However, it is their job to schedule those races and to put this Cleveland race and this Washington, D.C. race on the same day. And not to give too much inside baseball.
It's American geography, man. American geography.
There was not.
They don't understand how close they are.
I think it's right. There was not enough. There was not enough communication with the race directors either in this instance, because I don't think it helps either of us. I don't think it helps Cleveland. I don't think it helps DC. We're pretty stoked about the fields that we're getting, but you know, hopefully in the future we can get a little more distance between these two races. The other part.
Yeah.
The other part is that we always seem to be on a rest week.
Yeah, that is true. The schedule's so front loaded that it's kind of just like a natural week for everybody to take a rest. And
we're on a World Cup race, which is fine, you know, and that's going to take away the top people who decide to go. But then it's also, we're talking to these racers like, I've been racing every week since, you know, track.
Yeah.
And this is it. This is my week off. I'm just like, ah, darn it.
Yeah. Because, you know, we kind of skipped over a little bit. Of course, coming up this weekend is, how do you say it, David?
How do I say what?
The race is coming up this weekend.
Half of Holy Week. That hasn't happened yet.
Oh, Gloucester?
Yes, we have Gloucester coming up this weekend.
Gloucester.
So, you know, that adds another week of racing. So, you know, a lot of people on the East Coast aren't going to skip that. And then you're just DCCX is the weekend after that. So it's like we just said, it's just a natural place to break. So, yeah, you got to do something about that, Bill. Get on the stick, man.
And then I won't even bring up Interbike deciding to have their own little race in North Carolina.
Is that about?
On a double UCI weekend. That's not really supporting the sport and offering, like, you know, a nice prize list to try to lure down some of the bigger names. It's just like, come on, people.
Yeah, that's not cool. October 22nd and 23rd is, of course, DCCX, the North Coast GP in Cleveland, and it is also the European Championships. So that's, you know, that's going to be that weekend. And then, you know, guys, we're getting very close to, and I'm very excited for, the Pan Am races in Cincinnati. That'll be the weekend after DCCX in Cleveland. So, we're getting ready for that stuff, and we'll be covering all that stuff. Are either of you guys going to be going to Cincy?
I'm calling a race at Bloomer Park here at the International Velodrome, Bloomer Park Cyclocross on the 29th. I have some pressure out there from Mr. Cross Vegas, Brooke Watts himself, has told me I have to be down there for the Pan Am Championship. So I don't know. We'll see if I'm going to make it down there.
He just wants to hang out with the cool kids, man.
I will. Yeah. I will be at a Rosaryville State Park in Upper Marlboro, Maryland, calling the Takino cyclocross race.
Well, I will be. You're calling? Is that like being a bingo caller?
Yes.
Well, all those races and more will be coming up. We'll be covering them on the show, of course. All right, guys, anything you want to say wrapping this bad boy up?
I complained a lot. I'm
no,
sorry.
No,
you did.
No, okay. It's okay. No, it's just locker room talk. Just the banter that we have amongst ourselves.
All right, Bill, if people want to get in touch with you, where's the best place to do it?
They can email me at feedback@cxhairs.com. Can also follow me at cxhairs on Instagram and also on Twitter. And come to DCCX October 22nd and 23rd. It's going to be a huge party, and the racing will be pretty awesome.
Yes, and David, what about you?
Mr. David Palin on the interwebs at Facebook and on Twitter and that Instagram. We didn't talk about lots of things.
Geez.
Oh, never mind. Go ahead. Let's just hand it off here. Forget about it.
What? No, do it. Epilogue.
Not, now I got to hear it.
In Europe. Did you guys see what they did in Chicago?
Oh, no. Yeah. The mud
What'd
pit.
What'd they do?
Yeah, they did the between the barriers. They had basically a wading pool set up. What do you think? Is that a pinwheel kind of hokey, or is it because it's Chicago? It's a great new thing that they're doing.
It looked dangerous.
How, like, I didn't see it, but like, how deep is it? Is it like
40 inches? It couldn't be any more than 40 centimeters, right? Because it's behind barriers, between barriers. It was actually low barriers though, because a lot of guys were hopping the barriers.
That's the only reason I say it looked dangerous is the one guy I saw trying to ride it was really lucky that he wasn't taken straight for like some emergency oral surgery.
Yeah. With little yellow duckies in the water.
Now I'm going to have to see this because without seeing it, I don't know if I can say, but it sounds crazy.
It looked like it was rideable if you had a fat bike. Which one guy did?
The first guy through was on a fat bike. But, you know, to do that kind of thing, you got to figure it's probably a plastic liner on the bottom, which is going to be slippery as hell.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to see it.
There's going
to
be a European race next year that's going to see that clip and going, that's us. We're all over that.
That's us.
Because, again, we put them on this level of, you know, this dignified level that they do not deserve.
Absolutely.
if there's a gimmick, if there's a novelty, they're just as likely to do it in Europe as they are in the U.S.
Absolutely. Somebody should name a show after something like
that. I think so.
And if people want to get in touch with me,
saying goodbye.
Oh my God, I can't even get it out. I am at CyclocrossNet on Twitter. It's the best way to get a hold of me there. All right, guys, let's wrap this up, and we will be back to talk about these upcoming races soon. Thanks again, man.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
All right, there you have it. Episode 47 in the can. Thanks for tuning in. We will be back with you, at you, in your ears next week for episode 48. If you want to get in touch, feedback@cxhairs.com. Also, go check out the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. Become a member. Support this show and also the other great shows that they have on there. Consummate Athlete is doing some awesome stuff. Honest Bike Program. Always love those guys. Check them out. The Slow Ride Podcast. First thing I listen to as soon as it comes out. One of my faves out there on the podcast circuit right now. Also, the Meyerson Line. Adam is doing some amazing work. Love that he has gone just a monthly and really putting out a super quality show. The one on Bobby Lee, definitely one that you guys need to check out. A lot of controversy surrounding Bobby, and Adam is not one to shy away from it. So definitely worth checking out that show and everything else on the wideanglepodium.com. All right, we'll talk to you soon.